These are the Target Files. Journey back with us between the 1970s and 1990s on a TARDIS nostalgia trip as we look back at the novelizations and audiobook releases of classic Doctor Who stories. Accessing Gallifreyan Archive. Subject: Time Lord known as the Doctor. Sixth incarnation. Subcategory: The Mysterious Planet. Earth Sol 3 author: Terence Dix. Release: Earth Year 1987. The TARDIS has been taken out of time, and the Doctor has been brought before a court of his fellow Time Lords. There, the sinister Valiard accuses the Doctor of breaking Gallifrey's most important law and interfering in the affairs of other planets. If the Valiard can prove him guilty, the Doctor must sacrifice his remaining regenerations. To prove his case, the Valiard focuses on an adventure set in the Doctor's past. It is an adventure set on the planet Ravalox, a seemingly primitive world, but one which the Doctor and Perry find strangely familiar.
Hello, welcome to the Doctor Who Target Files, the Mysterious Planet Review, and for a change this week we are actually together. Alex has come up to my hometown of Swansea, South Wales for the Regenerations Convention. It's actually where we first met and became friends 5 years ago now, Al, but introduce yourself again, mate.
Hello there, this is Alex. I'm actually here for once instead of the done by video call.
It's exciting though, isn't it?
Oh yes, yes, Regen's always great.
Yeah, and as we said this week, we are reviewing The Mysterious Planet, the first story in the Trial of the Time Lord season, written by Terence Dix, novelised in 1987 by W.H. Allen, The Target Range. And we've got a few guests at Regen this weekend, Colin Baker, the Doctor himself, and Michael Jason, who played the Valiard in this story, Al. Are you looking forward to hearing those speak?
Yeah, because they're always interesting, because they both have really interesting and varied sort of acting careers, so they should be fun, they normally are. And the great thing about Regenerations is you'll probably end up being outside with friends and they'll be next to you like they were last time. So hopefully, we should hopefully get an interview of either of them, hopefully.
Yes, you were mentioning to me Regenerations has had a 3-year gap. At the last event in 2013 on the Sunday evening, you were actually on a table with Michael Jason, weren't you, having a beer? And him and Peter Purvis, the former Stephen Taylor companion, were smoking a little bit for men of their advanced age, we thought, but...
yeah, they were just next to me, which is the great thing about Regen. You have a beer, we have a drink, and you're just talking to other friends, and they're standing next to you thinking, that's Peter Purvis and that's Michael Jason Gillette. I'm doing something right here.
That's Peter Purvis, he worked with Bill Hartnell. But anyway, Al, The Mysterious Planet, the first story in the Trial of the Time Lord series. In 1986, Doctor Who had been majorly under the spotlight at that time after an 18-month hiatus. Your initial thoughts on the book, Al?
Well, it's an interesting one because it's obviously a start of something a bit bigger, but I thought it sort of lacked the normal problem of what you get occasionally, sort of things when they come back, which is not having a very comprehensive villain or something you can get your teeth into villain-wise. But I can understand that if you read all three of the Trial of the Time Lord stories, you'd get the whole point of this one, but I thought as a standalone it wasn't that great.
I read somebody's review of this and they suggested to read it if you're a big fan of the Sixth Doctor, as I am, as you are, Colin Baker, and just to avoid it if you aren't, really. I think that I was going to mention that towards the end as well. That does sort of sum it up for me. I've always been a big fan of Colin's Doctor. Not so much when I was 9 years old when it was first broadcast, because there's that special sort of relationship you have with your first Doctor. To me, it was Peter Davison. Bit of an abrupt change to Colin, really. But what were your thoughts on that, Al?
I would agree that it has to be your Doctor. And I it was Sylvester McCoy, it's my first Doctor, and then Colin or Peter's. I love Colin as he sort of evolved with Big Finish and become a much more interesting character, because he didn't really do enough of his character at the time. I think because of what was happening internally with BBC and their sort of love-hate of Doctor Who at the time. But I think it works in a way, but as a standalone book, it sort of lacks something.
Quite formulaic from Terrence Dix. At this period, we have suggested before, Terrence was churning them out a bit for the money at this time.
Oh, most definitely. When you listen to it, it's definitely an A to B. This happens because of this, and this happens because of that, basically. It does have that formulaic problem. That's what I think one of the problems with it is.
Yes, in comparison to the Targa books of the 70s, there's so much enrichment in those Pertwee stories, those, maybe to a lesser extent in the Tom Baker stories, but this more or less is just taken straight off the page of the TV script, isn't it?
That doesn't surprise me, because it is very formulaic, and as I said, I think on its own it does lack something, and I think character development lacks something as well in it, but I can see the point of it if you put all three together.
Indeed, I'd agree with that, Al. Yeah, characters in the book, there's as we suggested in the State of Decay last month, there's quite a few, isn't there, to get through. Any memorable characters more memorable than others for you, Al?
Well, the two thieves in it are very good. Drax is very good in it. I think the Valiard is very good. It sort of builds his part very well, and you've got good interaction between him and the Doctor, which obviously gets better the more with the other two parts of the Trial of the Time Lord. And I think because we had Linda Bellum and Matthew reading it, you got the whole feeling of the Inquisitor, because that's what he played in the actual TV programme.
Yeah, we'll speak about the audiobook later, read by the late, great Linda Bellum.
I think in some ways Perry comes away quite well in this, but there's also I get annoyed with her in this book.
Fair enough, yeah. Would you like to expand on that, Al? Why she...
Well, it's sort of the problem with Perry is that, yeah, she's got the sort of gung-ho action to her, but there is a lot of whining in it as well, I find, of, oh, Doctor, help me, sort of action again.
A strange point again with the female companions, aren't we? After Perry, you have Bonnie Langford, Mel, and, you know, I think she develops a little bit into be a stronger character by the time she leaves and ends up with Sablon Glitz, of course, in Dragonfire. Yeah, that he was introduced in this story. But yes, a strange crossroads with these companions in the 80s, isn't it? We've regressed from Sarah Jane. We've regressed from Leela.
Not really, to be honest. We are sort of sticking in the stereotypes. There was a bit more with Bonnie and Sophie's characters, Mel and Ace. You definitely had it with Ace, but I find sometimes with the TV version of Perry, it's very formulaic. I know they've worked on an awful lot of Big Finish and made her a lot better character, basically. I think in this, it's very formulaic. It's very, I'm in a problem, I'll scream, the Doctor will help me out, basically.
Yeah, the other part of the critical team in all Doctor Who, the Doctor himself, how do you feel Colin's Doctor is developed by Dix in the story and has developed in the TV version?
I think it's very interesting because it's the first one of the Trial of Time Lord series and doesn't really know what's in front of him. You've got that sort of great what if at the end of the book, what's going to happen next, and he's sort of in a trial situation, which is obviously for recording wasn't a good idea because you don't need much of an internal scene or anything for that. It's quite cheap, and I think that Colin's character does develop very well for it throughout the book and also through the TV program version, because he sort of starts off as somebody who doesn't know why he's there and then eventually works out they're trying to prosecute him, and then he sort of turns into a good advocate and works out that by unravelling the story will get him into more trouble, so he doesn't do it. But I think personally that it's a really good development for Colin's characters. It was obviously a really tricky time at the time.
Yeah, I think he's certainly grown into the role for me. It's a very confrontational story, isn't it? It scenes with the Valiard, there's the great sort of faux pomposity that Colin brings to the role. It's in full flow here, isn't it? You know, the whole insults traded with the Valiard, and we get that the build up of insults based on Yard, don't you? You know,
yeah.
Ending with Knacker's Yard.
Yeah, most definitely. They just build and build, and there's some really tight and great scenes between the Baliard and the Doctor. And I think they have developed that brilliantly now with what people have seen from what Big Finish have done it. But it just is really great. And I think it would have been less if you hadn't had the sort of court scenes between the Baliard and the Doctor, I think.
Yeah, very sinister, isn't he, Michael Jason's portrayal?
Well, that's the thing. On TV, I find him very sinister, but I sometimes think in this portrayal in the book, it's a bit two-dimensional.
It's indeed, that's where you lose something in visual performance, isn't it, I think?
Linda
Bellingham
definitely.
Does well. Linda Bellingham, we'll talk again, does well with the audio, but you do miss something. When somebody's so associated with one character like that, it doesn't necessarily translate to the page, does it?
No, unfortunately, because the actor has made that, Michael Jason has made that part so great and his, and Colin knows how to work with him so well. It worked so well on TV, but I just thought it was a bit flat. It just seemed, you know, he was getting at the Doctor for no reason.
There, we've mentioned characters such as Drathro.
Yep, Blitz.
The sort of influences of this story, Al, I saw quite a lot of Douglas Adams in here.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Is Drathro the robot, or is he a...
Yeah, Drathro's the robot.
Yeah, definite hints of Marvin the Paranoid Android there, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking about listening to it. It would have been so great if we had his voice doing this. It would have been fun. But it's just like... It's... the robot any point, and you've got this whole black matter thing going on, it's a bit sciencey. I don't know, I just don't get the point of it sometimes with Doctor Who thing. I think the robot's worth having though. I don't know if it was actually an essential villain.
Yes, I mean, there's a means to an end. It gives you that lovely scene towards the end where Glitz is manipulating it.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of humour in that scene, I find.
I think this one thing what definitely comes through still in the book from TV is the humour is very, very good. And the whole thing about, you know, one person who thinks they're not as clever as each other gets the up hand in the end.
Yeah, and we saw Glitz appear two or three times, didn't we? Twice in the Trial of a Time Lord series.
Yeah, I think
first
so.
First and last story, The Ultimate Foe as well.
Yeah, in Dragonfire as well.
Yeah, and he does sort of leave you wanting more Tony Selby in the portrayal, doesn't he? And he comes across quite well.
I think he comes over better than the Baliard. I think that he does come over well. You know, he's sort of very... And the way Linda Bellerman reads it in the audiobook, it's very sort of, you can see him as a cockney geezer sort of villain. It's sort of, but with a bit of a heart, you know, he's not all bad, I think.
Yeah, and you know, he's the sort of more calculating of the two, and Dibber's a bit of a buffoon, really, isn't he? He's not.
Yeah, but he's seen as that through the book.
The muscle, I suppose, he does.
Yeah, and by the end of the book, though, he sort of comes up with the great idea with the sort of stellar rock thing they find.
One of the humorous narratives throughout. With Glitz is that he's been to visit a psychiatrist, isn't he? And he's coming out with all the psychobabble we hear nowadays, which is so commonplace nowadays. Probably the first time I heard any psychobabble when I was 9 years old and I watched this as a kid, but it still stands up now. It still sounds to me, I mean, I studied psychology at uni, but it sounds to me like a load of nonsense.
And it's like, you know...
It's very humorous.
It's very, very funny, and I think it does come out well on the page that bit, Could you have done without the psycho babble? Because I was listening to that thinking, what? Well, I knew what bit, because I've studied a bit of that as well, and it's like, what on earth is he, why is that there?
Yeah, to me it's wonderfully subversive, though, from the narrative. You know, it's quite serious. And
yeah, it does take more away from the humour, I suppose, but it is very sort of chuck-away humour, I suppose.
It almost reminds me of that period of something like The Young Ones, where you'd have sort of cutaway sketches, you know, sort of talking rodents in the house and things like that.
Oh,
it sort
yeah,
of takes you out of it. It's very...
I always
of alternative comedy era of the 80s.
I always liked those bits. They were quite fun in The Young Ones. It's like... I think it was Tom's way of adding subversion to the whole sort of... Because they're all sort of on this planet and they're being told what to do. So I suppose it is adding that element.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the trial scenes as well. It really struck me, the ending. I don't think it'll spoil too much because it's a four-part series, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
You get the last few words written by Dix... As if the Doctor is settling down as a viewer himself, isn't he, to watch his own adventures?
Yeah,
The cliffhanger on TV was a lot more dramatic.
Yeah, the cliffhanger.
It's just like the Doctor sat down and.
The cliffhanger is much better on TV, but I actually thought the cliffhanger was quite good at the end of the book, and in a way that sort of semi saved him because you wanted to know what happens next.
It's very cleverly done, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, I did like that bit of part of the book. I thought it actually saved it in a way because you just had so much. I'm not saying it's not a bad story because it does have a lot of good action bits and there's lots of fun bits in it, but I just think it is as a separate entity, it doesn't work.
Now, chapter titles, Al. Now, Dix has had this issue of innuendo in the
totally,
era.
Totally.
and he goes and calls one of the chapters the Tradesman's Entrance. Did make me giggle a bit, you know. I think he was just, possibly he couldn't find anything too innuendo laden in the script itself, and he just decided to put it in there as one of the chapter titles.
Oh, not at all. He does seem to like his sort of jokes in his chapters, but in a way they do sort of tell you what's going to happen.
There's a, you know, a fair bit of gore in this book. Something to do like with the death of Katrika, of course, played by Carry On great Joan Sims on TV.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, what did you make of her end in the book?
I would agree. It's a very sort of grisly ending. It's sort of, you know, very nastily done. And does nasty endings help or don't help? I think they're quite good. I think they add what people like in Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you start to... I've got a certain amount of respect for her as a character because she's so stubborn, isn't she?
Oh, definitely. She...
totally stubborn, stuck in the way of this planet, which is the old rituals and...
Yeah, she won't change it on anything, and that sort of leads eventually to her end, I think.
Pretty much, doesn't it? Do you think that comes across well on the page?
Yeah, I think so, because you sort of get her whole point of view, and you can see that she's sort of being controlled from the start of her planet, basically, and the Doctor and Perry are trying to change her mind, but she just won't move.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hi, this is Alex, and this is the Who's News on September the 29th. Well, first thing we need to discuss is what's been going on in Doctor Who TV land. We've had more stuff about Class, finding out the release date finally. It's going to be on BBC Three, which is now only online in the UK, on the 22nd of October. And hopefully we'll have a launch date for when it's going to be on TV for people like me who need audio description. And the second thing we've got to mention is that there's been stuff about the Christmas episode. I know we'd all like the new companion to be in the Christmas episode, but they've decided to not have a companion and just have Matt Lucas's character back as a related character to the Christmas episode. So we'll have to wait till April for the new companion. We also have some new news from Big Finish stuff releasing this week. They have finally brought out the whole box set of Destiny of the Doctors. This was brought out as a thing for their 50th anniversary of Doctor Who, but unfortunately, due to rights and the people who own the rights to Audio Go, it became unavailable. From this week, from Big Finish, you can download it, which comes with new interviews and all the details about the people who recorded it, and also a very nice looking box set on CD. Another thing from Big Finish out this week is their short story range, A Full Life, which has Matthew Waterhouse being Adric again. It deals with all the events of his time in the TARDIS. Looks very good. If you're a fan like me of the Philip Hinchcliffe period of Doctor Who, then you'll be happy to see that there's a new volume 2 from Big Finish. It's called The Genesis Chamber and has Tom Baker and Louise Jameson on full throttle form.
Yes, onto the cover, Al. Artist called Tony Massaro. I'm not familiar with his target work before. Initial thoughts to me was a little bit Photoshop, really.
Yeah.
In the modern parlance.
It is a little bit. It has been sort of played with, I think.
Yeah, no Doctor on the front. We have noticed that before, haven't we?
It's not... I don't know. I'm one of these people who does like Doctors on the cover, so you know what you're getting.
Yeah, there's a big picture of Drathro, and what I do love, though, is we have Carry On Stalwart, Joan Sims, carrying a weapon. I just love that sort of subversion of people's normal acting roles.
Almost definitely. I do like that. It's sort of, you know...
That does tell you who Katrika is.
Yeah, she's a no-nonsense woman. You wouldn't get that normally.
But yeah, not a bad cover. As a child, as a younger man, would it have stuck out at you, or...?
Well, I don't know, because I'm one of these sort of people who does like Doctors on the cover, so you know what you're getting, basically. And I don't know. There's a nice shot of a robot on it, so it might have tempted me.
The Doctor Who symbol is the sort of McGann-esque Pertwee one.
Yeah, it's
blue. I've always liked that one, the different shades of blue. within the letters itself.
Yeah, I think it might tell me because of the robot one. I don't know.
And now I stand corrected. Katrika's actually got two machine guns.
Ah,
two laser guns, and that's that makes her even more badass, as we'd say nowadays.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, not a bad one, Al. You know, it might stick out for you.
Yeah, I think it might stick out because it's got quite a lot on the cover. You want to know what it's about, I think.
Could do with Colin Baker, but I think there may be an issue with Colin.
Yeah,
Dukes at the time as well.
I'm about to say, is that the whole rights issue period again?
Do you explain that a bit more, Al, the rights issue? Do you
remember? Basically, it's to do with Peter Davison, wasn't it?
That happened. Yeah,
basically, in the, when was it, late 70s, early 80s?
Early 80s when Peter took over, wasn't it?
Early 80s, there was... basically a rights issue putting photos of the doctors and it's like from Peter Davison period, and it's caused a bit of trouble. So I think a lot of artists went either put photos of them or didn't put them on at all.
Indeed. So it's all very interesting, folks, and we ended up with those horrible photo covers. But yeah, quite a nice little cover, this one. Wouldn't stick out on me. Could probably do with Colin on there.
Yeah, it's I think it would stick out because of, you know, it's got interesting stuff on it, but I agree. It needs I think a Doctor Who book needs a doctor.
Indeed, Al, indeed. Alex, we also are reviewing, talking about the audiobook release, read by the late great actress Linda Bellingham, who played the Inquisitor in these Trial of a Time Lord stories. Your thoughts on her reading and performance, Al?
I thought it was absolutely excellent. It's it was really good from start to finish. It had good pace. See, her American version of Perry wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it was pretty good, I think. Sort of, the Doctor was great. Well, her sort of, the minor characters were really good. Drax, you know, the two criminals were fantastically done by her. And it had good sound effects, you know, for the explosions and all sort of things like that. So I thought it was really good.
Yes, considering Earth is the twin planet of Ravelox, isn't it, where this is set? How do you feel yokels were represented this time? Because we spoke about that on the State of Decay review.
I think they were actually okay on this one, I think, because they weren't over the top. I only sort of get annoyed when they go very awkward. I think this one was not too bad, actually.
Yeah, Linda Bellingham, for me, manages the nuances between the old-fashioned received pronunciation and a sort of more modern take on it. Would you agree with that?
Oh, most definitely, huh?
Very relaxed accent. We all know her from, in the UK, something called OXO, and she was the OXO mum. On advertisements back in the 80s and 90s,
yeah,
wasn't she?
Yeah,
she always had that sort of reassuring motherly voice.
And other great comedies like Second Thoughts, which is like a really good comedy in the UK we had. And it was
brilliant,
like, it was like brilliant. And we knew her as somebody who was safe, and you know, and then you got her doing sort of quite an interesting one, being the Inquisitor, and it was fantastic on TV. You knew when Colin Baker had scenes in the court, they were going to really rub shoulders together.
Yes, they were good. She was good at refereeing the boys, wasn't she? And there was
most definitely. There are some fantastic court scenes, and that's what I think keeps this Trial of the Time Lord going. Because I think the main problem with Trial of the Time Lord, if you watch it all four things, it gets a bit dry.
Very true, Al. I would definitely agree with that, mate.
And we can all see why they came up the Trial of the Time Lord, because it was a time period at the BBC where they didn't want to spend any money.
Yeah, if we talk about that again in a minute, Al, still on the audiobook, still I'm giving my thoughts. She is very dry, she brings across the humour brilliantly well. Yeah, I think she captures Jason really well. Perhaps needs a little bit of work on the Doctor, do you think? We've had that problem before with some of the female performers, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. It's not bad, but it's still not 100% on Colin's voice. It's another one of these voices is a bit weird to get, basically. He sort of either get close or not close at all. I think he's closer than most.
Yeah, and the menace is there, isn't it, for Jason? Definitely.
Most definitely. I think he definitely gets the ballot. And as I said, I think her Perry voice is close. It's not great, but it's a lot better than some.
Soundscape wise, they use a lot of the incidental music. Was Dominic Glynn from the TV show here, don't they? What do you make of that? I mean,
I thought the actual instrumental noise and the sound effects were really good on this.
Yeah, there's actually one moment I grabbed my pants, to be honest.
I was
very scared. There's one moment I was lying in the bath listening to this on a Bluetooth speaker.
Is that the really big explosion bit?
Yes.
Yeah, I was upstairs with my new hi-fi and I thought I was going to get complaints with downstairs because it actually rattled in the whole of my room. That's how loud it went.
I was sat in the bath with a Bluetooth speaker on, you know, signal coming from the phone. It just happened. I thought a wall was falling down. I put my hands on the side of the bath, ready to jump out.
I was sitting on my bed and I'm thinking, this is going to rattle the whole of the room because it was so loud. It was
that low rumble, wasn't it?
It was that really big rumble and it gets rumbler and bigger and it's going. I thought, this is brilliant.
I mean, where I live in Wales, we get a lot of military aircraft going over us.
Oh, yeah.
Training exercises, and it was that, and it sounded so close. It sounded like
really,
the plane was outside
really
my bathroom.
Good.
Yeah,
I do like that, but I did like that bit a lot. It was really good on the sound effect, and that just adds to the experience, I think, because it's not the most interesting Doctor Who, if we have to say that, but it just seems to go well with her voice, I think.
Absolutely, I would agree with that, Al. So not a bad audiobook overall, mate.
No, most definitely. So it is worth a listen, definitely. So, I think overall for this, it's a good book. It's got good things going for it. It has interesting and funny characters. And, it has problems because it's the first part of something which is a bigger plot, which sort of, on its own, doesn't work very well. I expect if you read all three of the books connected, it would be really good. You see the point of it. So, I think for the book, I'd probably give it a 5. And then if we're discussing the audiobook, which was brilliantly read by Linda Bellingham, and it has a great sound score and a great special effects, I'd probably give that a 6.5, I think.
Fair enough, Al. The book for me chops and changes quite a lot. Terence, good man that he is, great man, is phoning it in a little at this time. Suffers a bit on TV from some of the directions, a bit poor, that doesn't necessarily come along the book. He expands little bits. He doesn't expand Terence Dix as much as he could. So for the book, I'd say a 6.5 for the book. Linda Bellingham's performance is very good. She still has to struggle with some of the narrative that Terence has written, but her voices are superb. 7.5 for the book, I'd say, Al. So overall, I probably agree with what I read somebody say online about... if you're a Sixth Doctor fan, yes, pick this up. But if you're a Doctor Who fan, maybe don't. Maybe skip it.
Yeah, probably. I'm a bit of a Sixth fan like you, so I think it does work, but I would agree. I wouldn't... Maybe if you read all of the Trial of the Time Lords as one thing, it will probably work. But I think as a standalone, it has problems.
Yeah, we're not going to actually be following the Trial episodes in order now. We've got a Sylvester McCoy story to do next, but... your overall thoughts on the Trial season as a whole, Al, TV-wise?
I think I can see the point of it. I can see at the time that Doctor Who wasn't loved as much as it is now, and they managed to get it back, and they had to think of somewhere keeping it cheap and efficient, so, a trial doesn't take up any time or doesn't take up any sort of long-term sets or anything. But I think it works as a team. I think it does work, and you get that great twist at the end of the once you've actually stayed with it. I think it is one of these things. It is dry, it is slow, but if you stay with it, there is quite a good payoff at the end of things. I think it is worth watching.
It is there, yeah, that's true. I mean, I watched a documentary on the DVD, Trials and Tribulations to Entertain, released this in 2008, the box set of The Trial of the Time Lord. Good hour-long documentary about Colin Baker's time on the show. Colin actually argues that it was a big risk putting the story in of the Doctor being on trial when the whole show was on trial at the time, really, wasn't it? And it ultimately ended with his sacking from the role. Would you agree with that, Al?
I think so, definitely. It was a very... It wasn't loved. That's the simple question. It isn't in the state it's in now where, Doctor Who's fantastic, anybody loves it, and anybody will do anything. It was in the state of, we've got this programme... We give it one last chance and bring it back, and it was loved. So I think the storyline is quite appropriate and great at the time, but it was on trial. It was, in people's opinions, slightly wavering and dying, not as happy and as loved as it is now, which is where it should be, because it's always been a great drama. There's always been that point. I know it's a sort of niche mark and it's a science fiction movie, but it always has had great drama at its heart, really.
Yes, and Colin, as we said before, one of those Doctors served so much better by Big Finish. Probably the, for a lot of people, myself included, my favourite Big Finish Doctor, to be honest with you.
I would have to agree to that. I always flip between Paul McGann and Sylvester as well. I love them and Big Finish. But I think they've just done so much of his character. They've said, basically, how did you want, and had lots of talks from it, and said, how do you want to do it, and how should it have been done, and... that thing where they actually gave him a send-off last year, the last Doctor, I think it's called, was absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant, and he can always go back and still do stories before that, can't he? Such is the nature of Doctor Who, so it's not necessarily his last story, you know, it's just the last for his Doctor.
It's just brilliant to have, you know, that final ending, if we never got on TV due to all these problems there was at the time, and I think, you know, Colin's Doctor gets better through Big Finish because of the... keep coming up with new companions from... I think at Big Finish he's had the most varied companions, I think, now. So they've looked after and he likes doing it. So I think it continues very well, really. And, you know, we actually get more of the Doctor we should have had on TV, really.
Yes, I do like Colin's quote, on audio, I'm always 40 years old, he says. So that's...
this is the way it can be, isn't it? You know, you don't have to age or anything on audio, you can be any age, and that's the great thing if you've got a great audio voice like he has.
Yeah, one Big Finish play I still haven't listened to, Al, was the sequel, Trial of the Valiard.
No, I haven't heard that. I have to put my hand on it, so I haven't heard that yet either. It's meant to be very good, so I might be tempted.
And haven't seen Michael Jason here 3 years ago and met him again, actually on the way in here this evening. He still has the same voice, folks. He hasn't aged, really. He still looks the same age, which is quite scary.
You were saying that because that was 3 years ago. You think by now he aged, but you're saying he hasn't really aged at all.
Indeedy. What a voice he has.
That voice is beautiful. I can listen to that voice any time.
The catharsis of spurious morality, folks. He had to say that menacingly, and he managed it back in 1986.
As a bonus this episode, listeners, over the weekend at Regenerations, Michael was lucky enough to ask the Valiard actor Michael Jason a question during his panel at the event. Here it is for you now.
Hello, Michael. You had these superb confrontational scenes with Colin Baker in The Trial of the Time Lord. What was it like to work with the late, great Linda Bellingham being the referee for you two? In that story.
Oh, Linda was a lovely actress. She was a bit cheesed up with being stuck in the studio, and Colin, of course, had to say a lot of very bad, but I got on very well with Colin as well, acting-wise. We kind of gelled, because as I said, sometimes the scripts weren't as good, and we had to really be on top of it, so that if you played some of those scripts too real and too natural, it would have just gone out the window. But Linda was... the good die young, don't they?
Definitely.
Oh, well, you're still going strong, so there we go.
McGarvey's still around.
Next time on The Target Files, we will be discussing Remembrance of the Daleks by Ben Aronovich, with the BBC-released audiobook read by Terry Molloy.
Doctor Who Target Files, The Mysterious Planet Review, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. I Am the Doctor, originally composed by Murray Gold. Version for this podcast recorded by Grueling Terror 42. Check out their channel on YouTube. Newsround opening and ending theme, originally composed by Ted Heath and his orchestra and by John Baker. Incidental music for The Mysterious Planet, composed by Dominic Glynn. No copyright infringement intended on any music used in this podcast. Doctor Who Target Files, The Mysterious Planet Review, was recorded at the Village Hotel Swansea Regenerations Convention during September 2016.